got to know when to hold 'em. Know when to fold 'em. Know when to walk away.
Know when to run.
You never count
your money. So we back at Life's a Gamble. This is your host, Melvin Prince Jonathan. So today's my birthday, you guys. And I had some running around to do, you know. And so it's such a blessing to have family. And so everybody wants to do something for me. And so I'm down here. And you got some calling. Calling number is 888-329-3306. I have a few issues today. I'm going to probably always have issues. When you call in, I'm going to ask you a question. Are you rolling them or are you passing them today in reference to the challenges in your life? So I still have this issue with this bus, with SEPTA, asking for $240 million. Seems like nobody else wants to talk about this, and then nobody wants to appear at city council on Thursday and say, hey, we don't have it. We just don't have it. We don't have the $240 million that you are proposing. Why don't you go to the medical marijuana people, since they are not taxed and since they can't put their money in the bank, and see if we can work a relationship out with them? Or why don't you do something with Uber and Lyft, enter into a partnership with them? You know, the ridership has dropped off because there are other transportational services, and some of those services are safer. So why don't you, you know, partner up with somebody and take 30% of their business and still recoup your money? Or why don't you segregate the paratransit part of SEPTA and make it and develop it so the age of 55 to 80 or 55 and above could ride paratransit, and let 55 and under ride the regular buses? And in that way, you can ask for money specifically for an area that will allow you to buy more 16-passenger buses, that allow you to hire more people, that will generate different pocket of money for the seniors. Because the seniors don't feel safe being on the same bus, the same transit system with younger people. Now, it may benefit you. You got to understand, some of this chaos benefits police. They work. They work to try to undo this unrest situation. But you guys know that the potential of chaos is going to happen. From TikTok to YouTube, people trying to dance on the train, people trying to record content on the train. And so you are putting the seniors at jeopardy every time some kid climbs on a pole because his friend is filming him on the train or on the bus. And it's upsetting to the seniors. But nobody's listening to you. You got a whole town where we listen to everything about what goes on in other parts of the world, opposed to trying to fix your issues in Philadelphia. $240 million. They want you to stand in front of them. They want you to articulate why they shouldn't get the money. But you stand in front of them by yourself. You don't go in there with 10 people, 10,000 people, 100,000 people. You go in there one or two people at a time. It is not in our best interest to get them $240 million. It's in our best interest to find $240 million if they choose to write the proposal. You know, you guys can't tell me if SEPTA is a nonprofit or for-profit company. This is what I mean when I said last week about we are becoming a group of uncomfortable, comfortable people. You were so uncomfortable that you're comfortable. You don't have and you don't ask for it, and you make do with what you have. And I think that mentality is gone. That's a backwater, back-in-the-day mentality. You need to fight SEPTA. They do not need to ask for $240 million after getting the COVID money, after improving their budget, after getting money for the police officers. Remember, they were going on strike, so we found money for them. And now you're asking for a whole new pot of money. No. Go down to city council and say no. But you know what? Some of you are lazy. Some of you are apathetic. You know, you want to fight the messenger. You want to shoot the messenger. But every day you see the crime, whether it's on the bus or in front of the bus. They took the responsibility out of the DA office to prosecute crimes around SEPTA because there was just too many of them happening too frequently. But yet, hey, it's Philadelphia. You know, it's not Trenton, it's not Newark, it's Philadelphia. So these things are expected to happen. Even when we get them more money, even when we sign new union contracts. And I'm going to get off the subject of SEPTA because I didn't say it all I want to say about SEPTA. You know, go down city council on Thursday and make your voice heard. It'll be a travesty if they increase the fares on SEPTA. Tell them to do some partnerships. Uber and Lyft, join that partnership. You know, make it senior rides. You give out all these. So what happens is that they ask for this money. And it's based on giving away these transit cards, right? But nobody's riding it. The service is bad and it's dangerous. So you see people, but look, if you got a double bus and it only has 7 people on it, you got to pay. It costs more to operate that bus than it does to pay the driver on that bus. So that means that that route is not servicing the people, so you don't need as big a bus. So if it's only service 7 people, why you got a double wide bus that hold 40 people? Are you kidding me? Shame on you. Let's talk about unions for a minute. DC 47, when I had a small stint at family court, when I left, I cashed out my health and welfare benefit package because I'm not going to leave it. I'm not going to let it roll over. I'm not going to let it accumulate. I'm going to take my money when I leave. You know, if I hit the lottery, I want you to cash me out. I want you holding my money. I want you getting interest on my money. DC 47, the reason why I can speak about DC 47 is because I was in that union. They took union dues out. So you don't have to recognize me as an officer to be in that union. If you take my money, then I'm a person that can vote. And at that union. And so for you not to negotiate in good faith and get a long-term contract, all you got was an extension. And it's like she beat y'all down more than she beat anybody down. We gave the Temple Police a full contract. We gave SEPTA Police a full contract. We gave Philadelphia Police a full contract. You the only union that went in front of them. And they say, well, let's just extend it. Let's extend it a year. A lot could happen in a year. I'm going to go to the phone calls. Miss Mary, how are you?
Yes, good afternoon, Prince.
How are you?
You know, I don't see negotiating a contract for 1 year. I think that's a little ridiculous.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, if anything, if they need to make sure that they've put the information out to their union members. Because, you know, I have never seen a union head that would negotiate a year's contract.
It's a fool's move. Miss Mary, let me tell you that like this right here. You know, all these District 47, I've worked with these women at family court. And I think the majority of them are in the administration part. And, you know, they do a heck of a job. They got the Advils and the Tylenols because they got bosses that demand so much from them. You know, and for you, these are the same women who bought into the idea that the first African-American female mayor that's going to do us right, that's going to, you know, present for us. And this is the same one that decided to give the very people who supported her, she gave a one-year extension. What is an extension? Give me a contract. You didn't give all these other police forces, these other unions, contracts. And yet you made them go back to work. You took away the home care from them. You didn't give them the grandparent care that you said you was going to give to them. And yet you can't get nobody who works for DC 47 to come and tell me why they negotiated, and it can't be in good faith. Because if you had asked me and I was still a union member, I would have said no. So who did you ask? What members did you ask?
Now, also, I just want to say that SEPTA need to get all their benefits or monies from the state. And I think the city needs to start looking at the state based on these prisoners, ex-offenders that have been railroaded by not only the police department, the district attorney's office, the judges that they had in place. Because I saw a show on Oxygen yesterday based on the Innocent Project, where mm-hmm. it was instituted by District Attorney Larry Krasner. And they indicated that it was a prosecutor in place that basically falsified documents,
mm-hmm.
and he was indicted mm-hmm. by Larry Krasner's office with these police officers. You know, you can be indicted for a number of years. I've seen them indict people, and they were indicted for like 40 years, and nothing was done. You know, so we need to stop this. If we don't have a conviction, a prosecution and a conviction in place, then it means nothing. And with these wrongful charges that was brought against these ex-offenders in prison for 40 years, but they want to sue the city of Philadelphia.
I seen a man in Chicago. I just read the article today, probably coming in here. They gave the judge awarded him $50 million. He spent 10 years in prison on a murder that he was nowhere near the crime scene because the officers and the detectives and stuff placed him there. And something like the Innocent Project took on his case.
Right.
And he got $50 million. And they say in Chicago, over the year, they've paid out $90 million. You know, the problem that I have is when an officer lies on you and the DA takes that lie and prosecutes you, and then they both go home and go to sleep. Like it's okay. They go to sleep. They take a break. They go to sleep. You know, and so here's the thing that gets me. To your point, if we lock them up and incarcerate them, since we got 120% incarceration, so we're overcrowded in the prisons and stuff like that, we got between 30% and 40% of correctional officers and stuff like that. So that means that a lot of services that we have to provide for them are not being met. And if it's not being met, then it's going to be chaos. And if it's chaos, you're putting the lives of the correctional officers in danger, as well as lives of inmates who may not be as aggressive as some of the inmates in there in danger. And nobody's reporting that. Nobody even mentioning that right there. The problems that we're having, the deaths that may occur, the deaths that are hidden that may occur inside of the inmate. You don't have any more COVID, so you can't say they died of COVID anymore. So there's a lot of things that we need. And people with cell phones, opposed to taking pictures and recording so you can upload it, you need to record some things that matter so we can get some solutions to some of those problems. Just, Mayor, I'm going to take a break. You stay on the line. I'm going to talk to you on the other side. So just hold on one moment, and we'll come back, and it'll be the Miss Mary and Prince show.
Okay.
I love the Army. You just have this brotherhood that you can't find anywhere else. Since coming home from war, I've tried so many different things. I just remember thinking, like, it's over.
After being forced to medically retire, Angie battled addiction to prescription medications, eventually losing her house and marriage. Then she found Wounded Warrior Project.
And so I went online, I signed up, and I knew that Wounded Warrior Project was definitely my new community. One of the staff members, she put me in for peer mentor training. It was like for the first time someone recognized something good about me and thought that I had something to give back to someone else. Are you doing okay otherwise?
I've kind of picked up woodworking with my grandfather, so.
I got 3D stuff.
All those activities gave me a new way to live without drugs, a new way to live without feeling like I'm broken. You can live a meaningful life after traumatic experiences.
You wouldn't go into battle alone. You don't have to fight this alone. Visit woundedwarriorproject.org/not alone.
You got to know when to hold up. Know when to fold up.
Miss Mary.
Yes.
I want to ask you this question right here. So you got two seats. Now, folks want you to go out and vote tomorrow for two special election state rep seats. And what I don't understand, and maybe you can explain this to me, the ward leaders already picked the people. So it's not like you voting for A against B. You're voting for the candidate that they've already picked. The ward, the Democratic Party has always been really tight as far as, you know, no interruptions. You know, that's how come I was surprised when the Working Family Party penetrated their system, because they have a system. And so the two people that are running for the two state rep seats, they saying go out and vote for them, almost like your life depending on it. But why should they? Because they already got the position. They're not running against anybody. You've already handpicked them to go out there and fulfill that position of the state rep people who stepped down. So why this dog and pony show is always in front of us? Like, it makes no sense to get on the airlines and try to encourage people and get, you know, your butt kissed in reference to because this person is somebody that you need to listen to them. It don't matter if you listen to them or not. This person going to get him. He going to vote. His sister going to vote. Girlfriend going to vote. Mama going to vote. And those three votes right there going to get him in office, because he's not, no one else is running against him.
On people not voting, because they get in there automatically. They really don't care if you vote or not.
That's exactly right.
But, you know, back to, we paid $60 million to four ex-offenders that were
wrongfully
under
accused.
That Innocent Law Project, mm-hmm. where they were railroaded by the police officer, the district attorney's office, mm-hmm. and you need to think about how many people look at those cases. It starts with the police officer, then the detective, then you figure the assistant district attorney, the prosecutor, the actual district attorney, and then the public defender, and then the judge makes the decision. You mean to tell me none of them knew that these people were innocent? Because they have to look at every brief, every case.
They should.
But yet they want to sue us. Those cases are required by law to be investigated by the FBI, the state attorney general, and also the U.S. attorney. Because all these people that I just named are government officials.
But the judges can't prosecute the case. The judge has to stand up there and listen to both sides. Although that judge is a former lawyer, and they may know the law front and back, they have to let the representative bring their case in front of them, the front of the judges. And so, because I've seen plenty of judges that are smart, that are brilliant judges, and they look at the attorney and say, you got to be kidding me. You know, go work that out, or go fix that, or go negotiate. Doesn't make any sense. It's not law. But then you got a lot of them, Miss Mary, to your point. Let it run the gamut. Let it run the race and lock an innocent person up. And the majority of the times it's because they know they don't have the financial resources to fight this. They know they don't have the financial resources. And time again, I try to tell everybody, this unification, the fact that people stick together, and the fact that they are in government and they ride for each other, there's not one firehouse that don't share the same ideology when you come in as a new employee. There's not one police station that don't share the same ideology. Everybody share the same code and ideology, or you're going to get ostracized, or you're going to cease to exist. Gonna get stuck in a fire or something like that. You're not on the same page, and you're a problem. They fix them problems.
Yeah, but Prince, the judge is required by law. She has a law clerk, or he has a law clerk mm-hmm. as a judge. They are required to review those cases in front of them and make an informed decision based on what the defender, defendants are providing and what the prosecutors are providing. You don't take their information as gospel. This is why all these cases with the Innocent Project and these people that were sent to jail illegally, these people that I just named have to be investigated by the FBI because the information was there for them to see.
But the judges only respond to a case when it goes to when let's say, for instance, she had ruling on a case. And then the Supreme Court hears this ruling and it's kicked back to her. Now she has to respond to why she ruled or why he ruled in favor of whatever the penalty was. And so the question that you would have and that I would have is, okay, so if we found that there was error in the ruling and we found that all these mistakes were made and they were not caught by the judge, then what do we do? Do we discipline the judge? Do we discipline the prosecutor? Who bears the burden of blame for this right here, opposed to taxpayers paying millions of dollars, instant millionaires, period. Opposed to taxpayer making instant millionaires, who do we hold accountable?
All government officials. I don't care if you're with the city government or the state or the federal government. You have to be some oversight in place. You cannot send thousands of people to jail. And they're talking about this is what they're looking at in the city of Philadelphia with this innocent law project where people were sent to jail under the prosecutors and the district attorneys that we had here, starting with Ed Rendell. And then Lynn Abraham, Seth Williams, and now we have Larry Krasner. Everything is documented, Pris. They're saying that one guy that was a prosecutor under, he probably started under Rendell. He was in place for 50 years.
Wow.
And every case that they overturned with this innocent project, he was listed, named, where he railroaded these people. But yet he's sitting there just being indicted, no prosecution in place. This is why any case that comes before a person that's named as a government official have to be investigated by the state attorney general, the U.S. attorney general, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. That's the law.
So let me ask you this question.
You know, not the district attorney.
Right.
Because it's a conflict of interest with the district attorney now since he started this innocent project.
That is what I was going to ask you, because fundamentally he can't wear both hats. He can't do both jobs. And the problem is that I don't think he ever clearly understood that. And he think that he could be impartial and he really can't. You know, Lynn Abraham didn't care about an innocent project at all. She cared about cleaning up crime. She cared about lawlessness. She cared about, I don't think they would have been looting stores under Lynn Abraham like they're doing under Larry Krasner. I don't think they'd be riding bikes up and down the street under Lynn Abraham like they're doing with Larry Krasner. And I don't think that a mentality that you might have to save a few requires you to be on the other side. It doesn't require you to sit in that seat you were sitting in. Because you can't foster and mentor a kid and then lock his older brother up. You can't have it both ways. You know what I mean? Because that kid looks up to his older brother who was doing all the bad things he probably shouldn't be doing, but that's his brother. You know what I mean? And so I think you turn most of these lawyers in the case in the DHS caseworkers, opposed to having them being prosecutory lawyers, learning how to make it in corporate America once they leave the DA office. You got a bunch of them that can probably go to DHS and get a case manager job with the law degree.
And then you look at with all these cases now that's being filed against the police officers based on excessive force, murder. They're suing the city, you know, saying that it's what's this, immunity? They have this type of immunity now. It has nothing to do with immunity. If anything, if the oversight isn't done by the Attorney General under color of law, then the district attorney has no jurisdiction to even touch these cases. If anything, they can work with the state attorney general, but to take it upon themselves to call themselves prosecuting people now, and they don't have a clue, because we've seen what happened in Philadelphia with the Poundnail case. With Larry Krasner had that case, the judge informed him that he made errors, whoever represented the district attorney's office.
Right.
Instead of him going and filing an appeal with the correct information listed, now you're looking at it's basically time barred now, because she dismissed the case on the lowest charge. That's possible. So what could you charge this person with? You know, so if you don't know what to do on your job, then it's a problem. And who pays the price but the citizens in Philadelphia? And then thinking that it's okay to increase our taxes, because Mayor Parker had to increase everybody's city wage tax to pay for all these lawsuits. Now she's have to increase people's taxes on their properties for these lawsuits.
I don't think that when you do your research and you look at the Wanamaker building and the Lowe's building and all those big buildings downtown, I don't know if you remember some years ago, it was the research done of all of these companies that don't pay taxes in the city right here, all of them that owe significant back taxes in the city, right? I think you need to go after them and recoup some of the millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, and then properly budget that into a way where you could pay off, or it could be a contributory budget towards some things. But I don't think that the DA office.
You know what?
Because I want it clear. Hold on. I want it. We used to do that. We used to put them in the papers. Remember?
Exactly. Now, I guess these attorneys, these big corporations, they made a deal with, I guess, the district attorney or the state attorney general. You know, they still do that in other counties in Pennsylvania.
Because
I'm looking at some in the Inquirer now where people and businesses owe back taxes
If they catch you for a solicitation, they put your business in the newspaper. You know, you're out there picking up people on the highway. They put your business in the paper. If you owe back taxes, they put your business in the newspaper. If you or your house is in foreclosure, they put your business in the newspaper. And so, you know, you don't even have to go to the newspaper now. You just go straight online. But the thing about it is are we going to get the results that we're looking for? Because on one hand, you're the first, largest, biggest, poorest city. And on the other hand, you spending money like it's 1999.
I know, ridiculous. And we have not a clue what Parker's administration, that I looked at it in the paper, exactly who are these people? Why do you need consultants with people that, I think the person was released from prison. Why would you need that person as a consultant paying a six-figure, I don't know if it was a one-time payment or a monthly payment, but they actually listed the people in the newspaper exactly. What are your job duties?
Tell me what the job duty of the persons that were stopped by the state trooper.
I know.
What was their job? You was an LBG representative? What is that? Like, if that's the case, then I'm not going to pay you $100,000 just to represent one group of people. I'll pay you $100,000 to represent the whole city of Philadelphia, you know, but your program's got to be congruent with the needs, not just a need. That's the problem that we have. You want to fund a program for a need, not specific needs. So if you were trained, if you were doing educational reading and developmental reading, and anybody can come in that program, LBGs or anybody can come in that program, then that, I would fund that program. But if you just funding it for a population because they're discriminated against, where? No, they're not. You just can't spend money. You can't ask for everybody to give you money just so you can spend it in South Philadelphia or just so you can spend it with one program. You got to make that program congruent to helping multiple people. And that's the viability of a program, the amount of people that it helps. You know, but you're giving these nonprofits, these 501c3s, money so they can get the vote out, so they can vote you back in office. You don't give a darn about the mission. You don't give a darn about the results from these programs. I remember hearing city council people say, we just issue the money out, and there's no problem with the services. Then we don't follow up. We don't investigate the services. We just give you the money.
No, it's up to the Office of Inspector General and the State Attorney General. They have to do the audits and the investigations regarding these organizations. And that's always been in place, but it was never done in the city of Philadelphia. That's why we're the poorest big city in the country, because we have a lot of government agencies in place that are not doing their jobs. And then when you see where misappropriation of funds, it's nothing where they actually go after the person, look at their bank account to get this money back, make them pay a fine based on the money that they illegally took from the government. Because, you know, it's no statutes or limitations on honest services fraud. They can go back and get these people if it's 20, 30 years from now. But yet, everybody turns a blind eye in the city of Philadelphia when it comes to...
Well, not everybody. They just sent the guys from university to jail with honest service fraud charges. So, not everybody. But let me ask you...
But look how long, Prince, look how long they indicted them.
Well, look,
how many years?
I wrote
Come
the book on.
On
it. It was bound to happen. More people need to write the book on it. I got a principal, person head of the principal union in this city right here who had a daycare and a casino in the back of the daycare. You know what I mean? Friends take care of friends in this city right here, you know? So I really don't, you know, so we can't
now,
have
when
it.
Have you,
can't have it
when
both
have
ways,
you
right?
ever seen where a lot of times when the controller asks for receipts from organizations and you're going to tell the person, oh, I don't have any receipts, like take my word. You know, we have never accepted that. We have never accepted that.
But every controller who've asked for receipts or who've done the investigation from Bukovich on have been short-lived. I've been short-lived, so I don't know if it's the powers at be, you know, or I don't know if it's the commitment that you make. I don't know if it's the pint of blood you give to get the position, but you either going to give substantial money or you're going to give a pint of blood. You're going to play the game or, you know, they're going to go after your firstborn and everybody else. And so there's a rigid, difficult system in Philadelphia called politics that will eat you alive. And so you don't have the autonomy to speak freely unless you got the muscle to speak freely. If you don't have the muscle, then don't speak freely, because when they come, they come. They come. And a lot of people have felt that wrath. A lot of people have lost jobs. A lot of people had stood on principle and still lost jobs. A lot of people have been drugged to court, you know what I mean, or pulled in front of union situations and stuff like that. But yet still, you know, we need to make a better Philadelphia, and I don't think we're going down that road.
No, we're not. Not when we're allowing people to get away with things that just because you're a friend of the mayor or you're a friend of city council. You know, I have seen it in the past where when the government, when we actually did investigations, prosecuted people, you know, because they failed to provide us with the documentation. You know, we investigated churches.
Yeah.
You know, so now it seems like it's a new generation where you just take taxpayers' money and you don't have to prove anything. Just take my word. The word now isn't good enough because it's bankrupting the city of Philadelphia.
What does the mayor stand for? Like, what's her? All I heard was green, clean, green, lean Philadelphia. That's all I heard. I still don't know what she stands for. I still don't know what's her pet peeve. I still don't know what she stands on to and represent us as Philadelphia. So when she go to Chester, when she go to Newark, she said, I made my mission to clean up Philadelphia. And she only talked about trash. So tell me, in the minute and a half that I have left, what does this mayor, the first African-American female mayor elected to the position, what does she stand on? What's her pet peeve? What's her purpose? What's her mission while she's in that office? Can you tell me that in a minute and a half?
You know what? I have not a clue. Only thing I've been hearing, the same thing that you've been hearing, a cleaner, greener Philadelphia, you know, but I'm thinking about what is the future for Philadelphia? Because we're going into a recession here.
Yeah, it's going to hit us
hard. And we're going bankrupt.
Yep. We stand a better chance of playing a lot. If you play the lottery, you stand a better chance of hitting that lottery opposed to you knowing what the mayor's purpose is. And she's hired all these people as consultants. She increased the budget by millions of dollars just hiring these people who helped her on her campaign. Now, look, Ms. Mary, you know, you always got a home here. I started a little late. It's my birthday. Are you rolling the dice or you passed them today?
Oh, I'm rolling the dice always. And happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
You work on your birthday, huh?
I do. Yes, ma'am. And we'll talk again. I'll talk to you next Monday. Everyone, life's a gamble. Thank you for your time today, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.